afternoon and happy St. Patrick's Day. Today is March 17th, 2021. This is the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. I'm Senator Mia Costello. Welcome, Senator Rivak. Welcome, Senator Holland.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And welcome, Senator Gray Jackson. The time is 1:30 when we gaveled in. Carrie and Doug, I really appreciate you making this meeting possible for folks in the public to listen in and to have it recorded for posterity. Today in the committee, it's a special presentation, a special day. We're going to deviate for a moment from our bills and our legislative agenda to examine a topic that's incredibly important to the state of Alaska. Senator Stevens, welcome.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here because this really affects something in your, we'll be hearing from your district.
It does.
Yes. Today is Aerospace Day at the Alaska State Capitol. It's the first time that we have celebrated this day here in Alaska at the Capitol. And this afternoon, we have Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer, who's with us. And Lieutenant Governor, thank you for being a leader in this issue and for being here today. You're going to provide the introductory remarks and introductions of our panelists. And then we have several very interesting presentations from the panelists. And with that, Lieutenant Governor Meyer, welcome. And please feel free to proceed with your introductions.
Great. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and hopefully you can hear me with my vote safe mask on here. Yes, so again, thank you, Madam Chair and Labor and Commerce Committee for providing us the time today to talk about all the aerospace activities that's going on in our great state of Alaska and how important these activities are to the overall economy of the state. And especially important, in my opinion, as we try to diversify our state a little bit more. This is a real infant and emerging industry that is just beginning. And of course, aerospace includes rocket launches, drones, satellites, and aviation, whether that's military aviation or general aviation. So it's a very broad area. And I think after you hear from the presenters today, you will agree that this is an emerging industry and industry that has all sorts of potential to grow. And I'm hoping after today's presentation, you will agree that we need to do everything we can to support and help this industry grow, as it is going to help our economy and create jobs. So we have many.
Go ahead and take a brief at ease.
Sure.
The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. As we mentioned earlier, today is Aerospace Day in the Alaska State Capitol, and I'd like to invite the Lieutenant Governor to continue with your presentation. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Madam Chair, we have some great distinguished speakers with us today. We're going to start out with Dr. Kathy Gahill from UAF, University of Alaska Fairbanks. She's the Director of Alaska Center for Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration. She will talk about drones and the emerging market of drones and the demand for and the use of drones in our state, but all over the world. And we're going to hear about some uses of drones that we probably weren't even aware of. And then we'll have Dr. Robert McCoy, who's director of UAF's Geophysical Institute. And he's going to be talking about all the rocket launches and research that they're doing at the Poker Flat Research Range, which, of course, is just outside of Fairbanks. And hear about their relationship and their contract, long-term contract that they have with NASA. And then we're going to hear from Mark Lester, who is the president of our Alaska Aerospace Corporation, and he's going to be talking about the rocket launches and various activity dealing with satellites and rockets and even tourism-related activities at Kodiak launch site. And then finally, we're going to have our executive director of the Aerospace States Association. His name is Ross Gerlich Bell, and he's going to talk about the interesting and exciting things happening nationally with other aerospace states and the importance now of Alaska becoming one of those 12 aerospace states and belonging to the Aerospace States of America chapter. That was something that we did yesterday. We had our first chapter meeting, established our chapter, and I'm happy to say that joining me as co-chairs of this chapter is Senator Stevens, of course, from Kodiak, and Representative Hopkins from Fairbanks. And our vice chair is Mark Lester, who, of course, is going to be one of our presenters today and is president of the Alaska Aerospace Corporation here in Alaska. So with that, Madam Chair, and with your approval, I'd like to ask Dr. Cathale now to present to us on the drone development at UAF. And I know she has to depart right at 2 o'clock, so if you're okay, I'd like to just let her go on with her presentation.
That sounds wonderful, and we do have the PowerPoint in our packet for those who want to follow along, and my aide will also be going through the PowerPoint as you sit there, Lieutenant Governor Meyer. So with that, thank you, Dr. Cahill. Welcome to the committee. We appreciate having you here today.
Thank you, Chair Costello and esteemed members of the committee. It's my pleasure to be here on Alaska Aerospace Day and to talk about the unmanned aircraft opportunities here for the state of Alaska. We're very excited about what we are managing to do, and it is definitely a case of Alaska leads the way. And I see that you guys are having some challenges getting the presentation up. There we go. All right, so talking today about the future of unmanned aircraft here in Alaska. And really what we're looking for is, what is the future? And here at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, we're trying to build the foundation for unmanned aircraft industry here in Alaska. We have tremendous potential. We've got great airspace. And it really is an opportunity for us to be able to lead the world. So let's start with some basic terminology. What is an unmanned aircraft system? Everybody focuses on the aircraft part, and the aircraft is really the thing that gets everybody's attention, but for us, it's just a pickup truck. We can go burn expensive holes in the sky, but that doesn't further anything. It's when we put a payload on that aircraft, whether it's a gas sensor or a communication relay, that suddenly that unmanned aircraft is doing a job, and that is where we really need to move things forward in this community. Of course, you need to be able to integrate that into the aircraft. You need to be able to talk to it. If you want real-time streaming data, for example, you want to be able to see it. You have to have good command and control of the aircraft to ensure the safety of the national airspace, which means you need to have a really good crew. So if you bring it all together, it is an unmanned aircraft system. And they come in a variety of shapes and sizes. Next slide, please. So in terms of these, you will see that we happen to have a wide variety of sizes and shapes, everything from the little DJI Mavic up top all the way down to bottom left, which is the AeroVironment Hawk 30, which is a 255-foot wingspan aircraft. All of these aircraft, the University of Alaska has some contact with. Most of these aircraft we either own or we have done airspace for. So the aircraft, bottom left, the Hawk 30, we help do airspace for in Hawaii. Bottom right, that is our pride and joy. That is our Griffin Sea Hunter, 16-foot wingspan, 300 pounds, approximately 12.5-hour endurance. Great aircraft for demonstrating to the FAA all the cool things we want to do. Next slide, please. So why do we care about unmanned aircraft? And the answer is a whole bunch of missions. So we are looking at anything from cargo delivery to remote communities, and that includes medical supply deliveries and emergency response. Infrastructure surveillance, you know, pipeline surveillance. Can we see people on the pipeline? Can we see a leak? Can we detect a leak using other sensors? Oil spill response, we've done some neat tests where you actually can spill oil in a test basin, have an unmanned aircraft release a herding agent to cause it to clump, send an aircraft with a torch through and light it. You're doing in-situ remediation before you can get a person on site. We also have, of course, a wide variety of import for biologists, mammal surveys, fish surveys, fisheries compliance. All of those things can be done with unmanned aircraft. Search and rescue, all wildfire response. The list goes on and on. It is a tremendous opportunity for doing operations here in the state of Alaska. Next slide, please. So we, of course, are an aviation state, and we have tremendous experience working with the aviation community to achieve most of these missions. We'd like to use some unmanned aircraft for these missions to really enhance safety. It also allows us to do flights during periods when a manned aircraft may not be able to fly into a community, like during fog. And sometimes we'll be able to do this more cost-effectively. An unmanned aircraft sips gas, whereas a helicopter chugs it. So it's a case where there is a potential to improve aviation safety and work forward towards achieving those same missions, but more safely. The other opportunity here is that this is a high-tech industry. We can get our kids excited about this. They can work in these fields. They can tackle these problems in their communities and move forward. So it's a great opportunity for kids to get involved, get educated at the University of Alaska, and to do jobs that keep them here in the state that are high tech. So University of Alaska is right now using the tech and testing the technologies that are needed to conduct these operations. We are working hand in hand with the Federal Aviation Administration to develop the appropriate rules, regulations, policies, and procedures. The key thing is we never want there to be a manned, unmanned aircraft incident. So, next slide, please. So the Alaska Center for Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration, or AQUASI. This is the University of Alaska's Unmanned Aircraft Center of Excellence. Our return on investment this year, if we get everything we think in hand, is about 14 to 1. So it is a really exciting commercial endeavor in terms of being able to get external funding into the state. The challenge is, of course, maintaining that and having the personnel and capabilities to actually conduct that particular work. And, of course, we are not allowed to compete with commercial industry. So as we're doing this research, we're developing the policies and procedures. We are transitioning them to the industry users here in Alaska. So it is laying the foundation for the entire unmanned aircraft industry in the state. So our missions, we're really working with the FAA to integrate the unmanned aircraft safely into the national airspace system. We want to make sure we are supporting Alaska UAS users and industry. We are the University of Alaska. Our job is to support the state. And, of course, we want to conduct scientific research. We are the university. We have a tremendous wide variety of opportunities and research projects that unmanned aircraft can really facilitate. Now, working with the FAA, next slide, please, is really something that is interesting. So for us, we happen to be one of the few programs, the only program in the country that happens to have three of the crown jewels of the FAA. We won one of the 7 FAA test sites. We are one of the 15 core schools in the Center of Excellence, and we are one of the Beyond sites. Now, each one of these things brings a special set of permissions and capabilities to the game. North Dakota also has all three programs. They are in separate entities. Only the University of Alaska oversees three of them. So we are a world leader, and FAA acknowledges where we are. So that Beyond program, what is it? It was a program originally called the Integration Pilot Program, started by President Trump, to accelerate the commercial use of unmanned aircraft in the national airspace. We worked with the IPP. It sunsetted last October, but the FAA was so excited about what we had done that they went ahead and took the programs that were successful under IPP, and there were only 9 of them, and asked us if we would be willing to continue working with them for the next 4 years. So the Beyond program is us working with the FAA for the next 4 years to really accelerate the uses of unmanned aircraft and developing the technologies, policies, and procedures to safely implement them in the nation. Next slide, please. So Beyond is not just the University of Alaska. Beyond has partners. And if you take a look at this listing of partners, we have an amazing bunch who are working with us. So we have, Alyeska Pipeline Service Company. we happen to have Department of Transportation. We have drone responders, which is a first response organization training. We have Echodyne, which is a radar developer that we can use for detect and avoid technology. We have Fairbanks International Airport as one of our partners. So we have aircraft manufacturers, technology providers, and a lot of these are either Alaska-based companies or have said they're going to move to Alaska in order to work with us. So that is a very exciting development in terms of where we are and how the field is going to develop here. So I want to highlight what State of Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities is doing. Next slide, please. So Alaska DOT NPF for us is a key partner. They have a really strong unmanned aircraft program that works with us. We are trying to leverage all of the different expertise at the state and at the university to really break open the airspace here in the state for operations for Alaskans. And DOT, of course, runs the airports across Alaska, a good portion of them. That is essential for being able to lead into doing cargo operations and a bunch of other things. And you'll see in here, it says coastal launch sites. That actually was a federal statute in the FAA Modernization Reform Act of 2012 that says we need to have access from coastal airports into permanent working areas in the Arctic for unmanned aircraft under 2,000 feet, small unmanned aircraft commercial or research, 24 hours a day, seven days a week, 365 days a year, and we need to have ingress and egress from those airports. DOT is working with us to make this happen. In terms of the Center of Excellence, next slide, please. The Center of Excellence I'm mentioning here because really what we're focused on in the Center of Excellence is safety. It is safety in the airspace. We are focused on, we have projects that are funded in ensuring safety of cargo operations, minimizing the risk of unmanned aircraft at airports, and safely flying beyond visual line of sight of the pilot in command. Now, that last one is key for Alaska. If you have to be limited by the regulations where you must keep the aircraft inside the line of sight of the pilot, you're going to be able to do almost no operations in the state. Most of the operations in the state, the whole reason we want to do them is because we can't get there by driving. So we really want to go beyond visual line of sight of the pilot in command. And the key thing is here, next slide, please, is that the visual line of sight is almost impossible to do right now under current FAA rules and regulations. So we really are working with the FAA to try to break this so that we can fly in Alaska and we can do those 100-mile cargo flights. We can do that, you know, 7 miles of Salmon Stream without having to have a person every 2 miles in order to keep the unmanned aircraft in the line of sight. Next slide, please. Now, having said that, we cheat. So we're doing a lot of work in Canada. So we have a tremendous amount of experience flying beyond visual line of sight, but we got it in a different country because the airspace is easier to access. So for us, we've been doing work with Transport Canada and NAV Canada, their FAA equivalents, to really advance unmanned aircraft operations. And we've flown over 20,000 nautical miles of flights in the past 4 years for a whole variety of missions. The most important one that we're doing for them, and we've actually been kind of adopted into the aerial surveillance program, is monitoring the health of the North Atlantic right whales, of which there are 400, and they like to hang out in the St. Lawrence Seaway. And of course, ships plus whales equals bad things. So we're helping them identify where the whales are using artificial intelligence on board our aircraft during flight in real time. It's an exciting evolution of technologies. Next slide, please. So we're working with Canada there, but our challenge is we can't do it here in the United States. So that's part of where Beyond comes in. That's where the Center of Excellence comes in, and that's where the test site comes in. So we are doing tests of technologies known as detect and avoid, where our aircraft can spot another aircraft in the air and either alert the pilot of the unmanned aircraft to move or autonomously move. So if we ever lost link with the aircraft, we would be able to avoid. Of course, once you have this technology, the FAA is going to be a lot more comfortable about going beyond visual line of sight. So if you happen to have a cargo aircraft going from Fairbanks to Galena and you happen to lose link, that aircraft could spot another aircraft, avoid it, and you would never have an incident with a manned unmanned aircraft collision. This is essential for opening the state for business. Next slide, please. As I said, the FAA likes us. So through the Integration Pilot Program, they actually gave us the first waiver under the Small Unmanned Aircraft Rule inside the national airspace for an operation that required no human eyes on the aircraft. So we did 20,000 nautical miles BVLOS in Canada. We have done 3.9 miles BVLOS in the United States under this rule. We were the first in the country to do it, and that was an essential step forward. Now, how many people did it take to do it? Next slide, please. The answer is a lot, and on there you will see 7 FAA, and most of them are from headquarters. So this was something where the things we are doing are of such high profile and such value to the FAA and the industry that they will send 7 people to Alaska in order to go hang out on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, thank you, Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, and make that mission happen. Next slide, please. So where are we going? What is the opportunity economically here? We are really moving towards pipeline monitoring. We want to be able to fly the entire Trans-Alaska Pipeline in a single flight. We have the aircraft technology to do it. We do not have the detect and avoid and rules and regulations to do it yet. So we are working in an area, and the FAA has now given us a 20-mile area over the pipeline that we can do this testing. Other companies from across the country are coming to Alaska to do the testing here because we are ahead of everybody else. The other thing is this allows our local companies to see the technologies these other people are developing so that we can take advantage of it. It's a great win-win. They pay to come play with us, and we get to see their technology. And all of this, of course, is moving towards, next slide, please, doing actual cargo delivery. And this is essential. We don't have Amazon's last mile problem. We have a last hundreds of miles problem. And we want to make sure that we are able to deliver cargo to communities. The business case is there. You know, you can have more frequent deliveries. You can have fresh fruits and vegetables come in. You can have emergency supplies. You know, hopefully it can reduce the cost of goods in the rural communities. Real potential here. Challenges, of course, you have to be an air carrier in order to carry cargo beyond visual line of sight. That's statute. So we are working with local air carriers in the Fairbanks region at the moment. We will expand across the state to use their Part 135s and get them certified to do unmanned aircraft cargo operations. We are also working with folks to bring a company through and get them a Part 135. So far, only 2 have been granted. They are the UPS and Wing, and we have a Fairbanks company, Unmanned Systems Alaska, that should be coming through shortly. So very exciting. Next slide, please. And we're looking at doing medical supply delivery. So in the next few months, we are going to be doing some testing between Fairbanks Memorial Hospital and Tanana Valley Clinic about delivering medical supplies to increase turnaround times, decrease traffic on roads, et cetera. This, of course, is a pilot for longer distance flights to get insulin into communities if there's an emergency. We're working with a major pharmaceutical company, and we're hoping to advance that technology even further. So what is the future? Next slide, please. The future really is that we're going to continue to lead the way to safe integration of unmanned aircraft in the national airspace system. And we will be flying large unmanned aircraft from Alaskan airports to show the technologies, to do that test and evaluation, to give the FAA confidence this can be done safely in Alaska. We will be developing all the technologies needed to do these important missions. And most importantly, we will be transitioning this to the industry here in Alaska. As I said, we can't compete commercially, but we can certainly assist Alaska's commercial industry move forward. So with that, next slide, please. I would like to say thank you very much. We really look forward to moving this forward in the state. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to take them now.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cahill. Your presentation was really interesting, and I appreciate you opening your offices for visitors. I think it was a summer ago, and for sharing your exciting projects with the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Professor Cahill. This is very exciting, what you're doing. And when you think of those of us who live in fishing communities and in rural areas, the opportunities are tremendous. You know, we seem to often lose aircraft doing like herring spotting, and now that seems to be an issue that would be solved because you don't need to worry about the weather, you don't need to worry about a loss of life, and then also your thought about being able to deliver produce and village needs to the communities is just really, really tremendous, really on the edge. Well, best of luck to you as you move forward and get the permission to do this. I think it's a tremendous plan you have.
Through the chair, Senator, thank you so much. This really is exciting, and we really see the potential to help change the aviation industry in Alaska for the better. We will be able to keep the best of the traditional industry and provide some additional options. So Alaska is the perfect place to do this.
Thank you. And just a brief follow-up, could you talk to us about the detect and avoid system? I mean, that's the big issue, isn't it? You know, that they could, without being unmanned, there could be an incident. And how does detect and avoid work?
Through the chair, Senator, the detect and avoid, we are testing multiple systems. Some of them are radar-based. Some of them are optical, where you use a camera to do the spotting and tracking. There are other ones that do an acoustic, where they listen to the signatures of other aircraft. The whole purpose is to be able to spot the aircraft, determine what direction it's going, and then have the system do an autonomous avoid so that you maintain what in aviation is called well clear, to make sure that you never end up in a near miss situation or an actual collision. That technology is being tested out at the Poker Flat Research Range, which Bob McCoy will talk about in a moment. And it is something that the FAA is very interested in. Here in Alaska, we don't have really the resources to be able to do a whole ground-based system the way the state of North Dakota is doing. We don't have the infrastructure. So we really are looking at onboard solutions onboard the aircraft. It really does assure that if for some reason the communications on the ground don't work, that aircraft will still always avoid a collision.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Again, thank you very much, Dr. Cahill. I appreciate you being with us today. And if there's any questions the committee has, we'll make sure that we forward them to you. And again, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Costello.
Lieutenant Governor Meyer, would you like to introduce our next guest?
Well, great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, our next distinguished presenter will be Dr. Robert McCoy. He's the director of the Geophysical Institute at the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
And I'd like to share my slides if I can. Is this working?
Yes. Thank you, Dr. McCoy. We're getting your slides up, and we can see them here from the table.
Okay. Chairman Costello, esteemed committee members, Lieutenant Governor, thank you very much for this opportunity. There's quite a bit of space activity going on at the University of Alaska, and I'd like to define it a little bit larger than what goes on at Poker Flat. You can see my first slide. When you pull up to the building at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, the Geophysical Institute, you see a sounding rocket out front, and you see several satellite dishes. Turns out Fairbanks is a great place to downlink satellite data, as well as the launch rockets into the aurora. We have within the Geophysical Institute about 9 satellite dishes, 7 of which we work with NASA or the Department of Defense, and 2 of which we work with NOAA. So I want to define aerospace a little bit broader. And my title is Aerospace Research and Operations. A lot of what we do is operational, some in many cases 24/7. Okay, can you see the next slide? Yes. Just a quick map to show you some of the aerospace facilities. I'm going to include Alaska Aerospace Corporation. We work pretty closely with President Mark and Lester and the Alaska Aerospace Corporation. But in Fairbanks, we launched suborbital from Poker Flat Research Range just outside of town up to the Brooks Range or out all the way out into the Arctic Ocean. We downlink satellite data around Fairbanks. I'm going to also mention HARP, which is in Gakona, another facility that we control. And I'm going to talk about how we collaborate with Alaska Aerospace Corporation. We're also working on an unmanned aircraft site up at Licktop Point, an area that we can drive to. So this is just a quick mapping of aerospace facilities. This is the next slide. This is a talk that Mark Lester and I gave just before the pandemic, talking about how Alaska really is an aerospace state and perhaps can be the low-cost gateway to space with both Poker Flat and with Kodiak, the Pacific Space Force Complex Alaska. We're both working on ways to keep costs down and encourage people to come to Alaska. The slide on the right is shows a couple of rocket launches that we've had at Poker in one evening. We have five rails that can launch up to five rockets in a matter of seconds, and to do science or for operational things. Okay, the next slide, the next click just shows the globe, and it shows from Poker Flat, we launch along those light green vectors up to the north, like I said, up to the Brooks Range or out in the Arctic Ocean. We can't launch over the pipeline, and we can't launch into Canada, but those are our lanes. We launch suborbital, which means that what goes up comes back down again. Mark Lester will talk about how from Kodiak, he could launch into a much wider area, both suborbital or also into orbit. So Alaska is very lucky to have two spaceports. Okay, the next slide shows Poker Flat Research Range and some of our activity. On the left, you see we've been launching rockets for over 50 years, most of them into the Aurora. We launch off a rail you see in the bottom left there. We have five of those rails, and the rails are inside that building. That building is on track. On a railroad track that we move back. We have radars, we have LIDARs, we have lasers top right. We can shine up into the up into 100 kilometers or more to do science. This is the largest land-based rocket range in the world and the only one owned by a university, and it gives us lots of advantages. The next slide shows what happens for a typical sounding rocket scientist, and I was myself one. About in 1994, I came to Alaska from the Navy to launch a rocket. I brought a scientific payload. You come in and you go into payload buildup. We, for each rocket launch, there's about 20 or 30 people that come to Fairbanks. For 2 or 3 weeks, it's quite a bit of an economic impact to launch one rocket, especially in the winter when the hotels are not as full as they are during the summer. You build up your payload for a couple of weeks. You take it out and put it on the rail. You can see the middle panel, rocket on the rail. We encapsulate them in styrofoam. We elevate, we pump heat in, and we can hold for a long time, which gives us a real advantage. Most rocket ranges, like, for example, at White Sands, it costs $320,000 a day. They can only hold for 45 minutes, whereas in Alaska, we can hold for weeks. And that allows us to wait for something interesting, like something on the sun, an event, before we launch. We can also recover the payloads. We launch typically up to the Brooks Range. We go out in helicopters, pick up the payload and bring it back. That means it can be launched again. I actually did that myself back in the 90s. The next click shows a launch we had on January 27th. A professor from Virginia Tech came and launched a sonic rocket to study the upper atmosphere. That was our last launch just before the pandemic. The way we're going, we should be launching in the next couple of years about 14 sonic rockets. Like I said, one of the advantages is we can go a lot higher than they can at White Sands or other places and still get the payload back. So interesting enough, a lot of NASA scientists who are interested in studying the sun are coming to Fairbanks, and they want to launch high, maybe 1,000 kilometers versus 200 or so, and they can get a lot more hang time to study the sun, and they can launch volleys of rockets, one after the other, which you can't do at White Sands. The next slide shows a self-propelled howitzer. It turns out that click to the next slide? There we go. It turns out that the Army at Yuma Proving Ground has developed a hybrid rocket round that can go more than 70 kilometers, but they run out of range. As I said, we have the largest land-based range in the world, so we're in discussions with the Army to perhaps do some experimentation with Army rockets here at Poker Flat. The next slide's a little busy, but it just shows some of the we've been studying the ionosphere and the aurora at the Geophysical Institute. for this is our 75th year. We have lots of instrumentation. We have radars, National Science Foundation radars. We have incoherent scatter radars, all sky cameras. We have instruments all over Alaska, and we provide quite a bit of support. That support is being used now, and we're working with the Missile Defense Agency to provide information for LRDR, the Long Range Discrimination Radar that's being installed and made operational at Clear Air Force Station. Quite a bit of activity, and it all sort of ties together. Next click, I want to talk just a little bit about polar orbiting satellites. Like I said, this is a great place to downlink that data. If you look at the slide on the right, polar orbiting satellites, if you want to map the Earth, you go into polar orbit, and those satellites orbit the Earth 14 times. Well, it turns out at Fairbanks, 11 of those come right over Fairbanks. We can actually talk to those satellites. We do quite a bit. Next slide shows on the left some of the satellite dishes. You can see these are 11-meter dishes there in the woods, and the one on the building is a 10-meter. That's, by the way, the highest point in Fairbanks. You can see that almost anywhere coming into town if you've been to Fairbanks before. I tell people, look for the blue satellite dish. We downlink almost all of NASA's synthetic aperture radar data. Synthetic aperture radar actually sees through clouds and works day and night, and we can provide quite a bit of data. The colorful image on the right is a SAR image of Cook Inlet and Anchorage. It's very, very, very important data. We're taking this data and we're actually providing it now. We formed a cooperative with GeoNorth, which is a Tetlik corporation, and also working with Lockheed. We're providing this kind of data to the National Geodetic Intelligence Agency, NGIA. And so they're providing this to the Department of Defense for domain awareness. Next click shows the HAARP facility down in Kokona. It was built by the Department of Defense, started by Ted Stevens, and finished up by DARPA, the Navy, and the Air Force for a total price of $290 million. There's only three of these in the world. It's basically a big ham radio. It's the most powerful ham radio in the world. It can transmit 3.7 megawatts, and we can do experiments in the ionosphere. We can create instabilities. There's one in Norway. There's one in Russia. There was one in Puerto Rico, but it collapsed recently, so we're the last one in the U.S. We power it with five diesel generators that can generate 3,600 horsepower each. It's extremely powerful, and we have quite a bit of things that we can do with this. Next slide just shows the power plants, five tugboat generators. We can provide quite a bit of power and to feed those transmitters and do some very interesting experiments in the upper atmosphere. Right now, the Air Force, the Navy, Department of Energy, and several universities around the country are coming to HAARP to do experiments in the ionosphere. We can do things. We can create instabilities or resonances that last for a few seconds and do experiments that can't be done anywhere else. We can create artificial aurora and things like that. Next click shows a real application relevant to Alaska Department of Defense. We could use HAARP as a transmitter, and if we put a receiver array, for example, at Delta Junction, we can make an over-the-horizon radar. You see that on the right side, the sectors. We can reach out hundreds of kilometers to provide over-the-horizon radar to look for cruise missiles or hypersonic vehicles. Next click shows if we look at other directions what we might see. We can actually, one more click, we could actually create an over-the-horizon radar umbrella around the entire state using HAARP. HAARP can transmit in any direction, and we can receive that information back. We can look for aircraft, cruise missiles, hypersonic vehicles, and even study sea state by looking at reflections off the ocean and measure sea ice. The next clip shows a slide from an experimenter at the Naval Research Lab who's been working with us. He's also working with the Alaska Aerospace Corporation to put a receive array in Kodiak. And what he wants to do is have us transmit south. He thinks he can see all the way down to Kwajalein or to Hawaii in an over the horizon radar mode. This is pretty exciting, and that work is going ahead. We'll see if we can do this. And I think this is my last slide. Mark Lesser is going to talk about his concept for a hypersonic vehicle test range along the Aleutians. And I just want to say that with the HAARP facility, we think we can see hypersonic vehicles. They leave a plasma scar, and HAARP, as a radio transmitter and with a receiver, we could actually receive these signals back. And that's my last slide. I just want to say Alaska is an aerospace state. We have lots of advantages. We have quite a breadth of activity. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Dr. McCoy, for your amazing presentation. Are there questions? Senator Stevens?
Oh, I don't have one, but I could come up with one real fast. Really, really impressive, Dr. McCoy, because I've known you for several years in your involvement in the Alaska Aerospace Corporation Board of Directors. But this is pretty exciting, moving, going over the horizon radar, being able to see all the way to Hawaii. So what do you project the future of that? When will that be able to use it for practical purposes?
If you don't mind, I'm going to hand this off to the next speaker, who's actually he's working with Dr. Paul Bernhardt at the Naval Research Lab. Well, my guess is as soon as they get the antennas installed, we can show the practicality of this. There's lots of interest in coming using HAARP as a transmitter. And we may be able to do some experiments with the NRL antennas that other people can use later. But my guess is utility could be, we could show it right away. I think Paul Bernhardt wants us to transmit for about 100 hours, and he'll do some experiments, and we'll see where that goes. But this could be fairly soon. We're hoping that the Missile Defense Agency and the Air Force will take this seriously. They've already invested quite a bit in HAARP, and we're standing by to use it to help operationally. We've been actually doing quite a bit of work to work with the Department of Defense. In some future committee, we could talk about some of the activities we have with unmanned aircraft, with our aerospace activities to support the Department of Defense here as they expand into the Arctic.
Well, thank you, Dr. McCoy. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. And Lieutenant Governor Meyer, would you like to introduce our next guest, President Lester?
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Madam Chair. Thank you. Yes, so the next presenter is Mark Lester. He's our CEO of the Alaska Aerospace Corporation, and as I mentioned earlier, also is part of our leadership team for our ASA chapter. Mark?
Great. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor, for setting this up, and Madam Chair and Senators, thank you for inviting me today to talk about Alaska Aerospace and everything we're doing in the state. And really a focus on, you're going to hear today, a big focus on the spaceport in Kodiak, because that's been the main focus of the corporation over the past 30 years, but certainly not the only thing we're doing, as you heard alluded to by Dr. McCoy, strong collaboration with the university. Dr. McCoy is my board chairman. Senator Stevens sits on the board as well, so we're glad to have their leadership on this. Next slide, please. So we're celebrating our 30th anniversary, formed as a state public corporation to advance aerospace here in Alaska. I think we've done a lot already, and there's still a lot to be done here. The corporation early on focused on creating an economic hub around a spaceport. And I make the analogy towards airports for this. We see airports being an economic hub for regions and communities, and the same is holding true with spaceports. Alaska was one of the first locations to have a commercial spaceport. We've really been defining what it means to deliver spaceport capability to commercial and government customers alike. We have a great capability, really a national treasure on the island of Kodiak, a narrow cape, supporting both solid and liquid fuel vehicles, suborbital and orbital, a lot of capability. I'm going to give you a virtual tour of the site. I welcome any of you to come down and get a tour, as well as to see an upcoming launch. One of the things we've been focused on is running this as a business. I came to Alaska coming up on 3 years ago, and one of the things that excited me about this position is to, even though it's an entity owned by the state and I'm a state employee, how do we do this efficiently from business practices and leveraging all of that know-how? We have not received any sustainment funding from the state or federal agencies since 2015. We take a lot of pride in that, and in delivering that economic value that was envisioned by Senator Ted Stevens and others in the state back when we were formed 30 years ago. One of the mechanisms we've done that under is creating a wholly owned subsidiary, Aurora Launch Services, that provides us a lot of flexibility in surging staff when we need them for mission and launches, and then pulling back that to a core group when we're between missions. Next slide, please. A little bit of the overview of Kodiak. Dr. McCoy showed you the graphic of the big green area. That's our launch band. We have the largest launch band in the U.S. That means we have the biggest flexibility to do suborbital and orbital launches. That drives a lot of customers here to do tests like missile defense interception or to launch into a polar orbit where the satellite's going over the North and South Pole. Another reason why we like Kodiak is it's really natural resource. Where we're located on the coast gives us a lot of flexibility with a safety, low population that we can then keep everything safe for a launch, but also meet the mission's customers, but also have a strong logistics capability. There's a deep water ice-free port there. The airport is co-located with the Coast Guard station, so we can get aircraft in there. We have daily jet service, sometimes twice a day in there. The Gulf of Alaska waters keep the temperatures moderate, so we can launch throughout the year. And then we have fiber optic that comes in here that goes two different directions. So we can have some customers working away from Alaska and getting the data they need. We're also seeing that now with the fiber optic being extended down to Unalaska. That's going to provide us even more flexibility in supporting launches and the Aleutian test range that was mentioned, as well as then providing the communities with fiber optic broadband connectivity, which I think is a great win-win. There's been about $120 million of capital investment here. This cannot be easily reconstituted. So when I talk about this being a natural treasure, natural national resource, that is truly the case in supporting both DoD and commercial launches. We like to say from the last frontier to the final frontier, and I think there's maybe a broader motto there that we can leverage there for the state on aerospace. Next slide, please, is a virtual tour. If you have been to any of the other launch sites in the U.S., and there's only three other orbital launch sites. That's Cape Canaveral, which we all know and love from NASA. There's Vandenberg Air Force Base, soon to be Space Force Base down in California. And then Wallops Island on the coast of Virginia are the only three other locations other than Kodiak that you can launch into orbit. And so all the resources and assets you would see down at Narrow Cape are similar to what you would see at those locations. We have launch and mission control centers, instrumentation to track the rockets and shut them down if need be within our safety corridors. We have payload processing, we can store rockets, and then we have a number of launch pads that gives our customers a lot of flexibility in meeting their mission profiles. So you see that on the next slide. It highlights the six launch pads that we have. We started off with launch pad one, which is the traditional tower. We still use that. That can handle larger solid fueled rockets, still all small class vehicles. Then right next to it is a flat pad for smaller vehicles. And then most recently, we've been developing what we call Area 3, and those are the pads you see closest to you on the screen. And these are a mix of use for both military and commercial launches. The pad in the middle, launch pad 3 Bravo, is used consistently by Astra, which is a new space commercial company. And we launched them into space in December. I have a video at the end of this, so I want to make sure I leave some time for about a 90-second video of their highlights of getting their vehicle into space in December. The next slide highlights, we've been doing this for 23 years. A lot of great lessons learned here, a lot of experience that now the world is turning to Kodiak and Alaskans to help them understand how to launch in other locations. You can see on the list, number of Missile Defense Agency missions, both launching targets as well as interceptors. And then most recently, you see Astra, where we're supporting commercial launch, the DARPA launch challenge earlier last year, about a year ago, highlighted Kodiak as the only place where they could support in the U.S. responsive and agile space to meet DoD needs. So that's another feather in our cap of providing support. So next slide highlights, what is a small lift or a light lift launch vehicle look like? What are this new launch capability look like? These vehicles, this is Astra's vehicle on the picture, about 40 feet tall. It all fits into a traditional tractor trailer, and that's how they ship it up. Makes it very mobile. They launch CubeSats, which you see there. So think of toasters and toaster oven size. You can launch up to maybe a college fridge, a small fridge size satellite. So you're only talking about a couple hundred pounds, 1,000 gallons of kerosene typically, and liquid oxygen. And this gives then from Kodiak access to replenish constellations of satellites. It gives an ability to, at a low cost, launch research and development satellites so you can, companies can test technology, and then also testing of new rocket systems as they move forward to operation. So we're filling all three of those niches, really the responsive access to replenish a constellation is what we see as the next step in this activity, as especially communication satellite constellations are being developed, including for polar regions. We see these smaller companies, launch companies, being able to replenish satellites from time to time. Next slide. In addition to Astra, we have several other companies that have signed agreements to come launch out of Alaska. Two of those companies, Taiwan Innovative Space and Agnicol, are foreign launch companies. They've turned to Alaska and say, look, we recognize that, one, the U.S. Is a big industry, and we want to be part of that. And then two is they recognize what we have here in Alaska. We're working with the Department of State on getting them permission to launch from the U.S., and we'll be working out over the next several months and maybe a couple of years on here. But exciting to see, just like we saw aviation in the 1920s, companies from outside the U.S. wanting to come to the U.S. and building this economy and seeing the U.S. as a leader in aviation. They're seeing the U.S. and Alaska as a leader in space launch and space activities. A domestic company, Phoenix Launch Systems, is also looking to come launch out of Kodiak in the future, and we're in negotiations with other companies as well. So I'm excited to see this promise being starting to be fulfilled, where back 30 years ago, having a multi-user spaceport, both for government and commercial launches, is coming to fruition. We see the government launches of supporting a surge in economic support, but the last maybe a couple of weeks or a couple of months, and then the commercial companies coming in a more enduring fashion. And with the commercial companies, they tend to launch quickly, but if you're doing several of those a year, then there's a constant drumbeat of activity going on. You're bringing in rockets, you're bringing in payloads, you're integrating those. And some of these companies have expressed interest in building rockets in Alaska. And that next step, I think, is really cool. And that not only are we launching rockets, but now we're going to be building an infrastructure and capability and jobs to integrate and build those rockets as well. And the next slide highlights some space tourism. So also at the spaceport, we've signed a new company, Space Perspective, to launch a capsule of about 8 people up to the edge of space. So you get in a capsule, you'll even have a bar and a bathroom, and you're gonna float up to about 100,000 feet, enjoy seeing the curvature of the Earth. From Alaska, you'll see the aurora, and float there for a couple hours, and then come gently back into either Bering Sea or the Gulf of Alaska, depending on which way the winds are blowing. You get picked up by a ship, similar to if you're familiar with the SpaceX Crew capsule. The Dragon capsule gets picked up on the back of a ship, get picked up on the ship for that. And so this is just another example of how the Kodiak spaceport is really looking at being multi-user, meeting a lot of different needs. This will be in the next few years. They're testing the system down in Florida. Exciting way to really open up access to space to more people who may not want to ride on a rocket and have that fiery blast behind them. They can gently go to the edge of space and really see the world the way astronauts see the world. And the next slide highlights that we're not only doing this here in Alaska, but we're being asked to do this overseas as well. Rocket Lab is a U.S. company, but they have a launch site in New Zealand. And for between 2017 and 2019, we deployed our antennas, our Range Safety and Telemetry System, RSTS, to New Zealand, and our crews would fly down there and operate those systems, and supported the first 10 launches of the Electron rocket down in New Zealand. And some of these missions, many of these missions, were DoD missions or NASA missions, so we're still supporting U.S. national needs here. And during those first 10 launches, Rocket Lab got their rocket certified for autonomous flight termination. So we helped the industry then move their technology forward. We've now brought these antennas back, refurbished them, and are looking to deploy them in other cases for other missions. I'm taking calls to bring them to other spaceports in the U.S. as well as overseas. We have an agreement with Spaceport Camden in Georgia, which is a new spaceport. They're waiting to get their FAA license. But as soon as they do, they want us to bring down these antennas to help support their launches, to bring the expertise to help make them successful as well. And that would be, I think, great for Alaska and great for the nation. On the next slide, I highlight some numbers around the economic impact Alaska Aerospace and the spaceport has already had. As I mentioned, our activities are 100% funded by contracts. So my salary, keeping the lights on, the fuel bill, everything is paid for through contracts outside the state. We've brought in over $200 million in launch revenue since our first launch in 1998. COVID has had an impact. Our revenues this year are down about 45%. But like any business, we are working through that and discovering new customers and working with both federal and commercial customers on new opportunities there. For Kodiak alone, Senator Stevens knows that we've had a strong economic impact there, coming up on $80 million is what we estimate on our impact to Kodiak for jobs. I see this when the commercial companies get launching more often, we'll be able to increase that number and have also more enduring. We'll be hiring more people on island, not just working for the spaceport, but working at the spaceport. Annually, we're spending about $16 million in goods, services, and labor here in Alaska. And then lastly, I'd like to kind of brag on our work that supporting the new space entrepreneurs here in Alaska. We've got some talented men and women working in the aerospace industry. The Launch Company, which is an Anchorage-based company led by Ben Kelly, is one of those companies that supports some of our activities at the spaceport, developing new innovation. He's a SpaceX alum. He's supporting a lot of the companies that are starting this commercial launch capability. So it's exciting to see companies like him. He just won an award from AFWERX, which is the Air Force and Space Force innovation capability around the Space Challenge. So it's exciting to work alongside and support companies like his. The next slide, I also like to brag about our people. When I came here, about 75% of the staff supporting a launch came from off-island. A lot of great expertise, but we've really flipped that on its head and developed that expertise and knowledge base here in Alaska. So now 95% of our workforce supporting a commercial launch is from Alaska, with 75% here in Kodiak. Our spaceport manager and our deputy spaceport manager were both born and raised on Kodiak. They understand that community well, they integrate into it well, and we're creating STEM jobs, more STEM jobs for Alaskans. In the picture on the right, those are two Alaskans. Rochelle Wood is one of the last ranchers on Kodiak. Day in and day out, she's our janitor. She keeps the place clean, but on launch day, she's our upper air wind technician. She launches weather balloons and collects the data and supports the go, no-go for launch. Shannon Edwards was born here in Anchorage. She comes out of the dairy farming community, and she caught the bug for launch, and we trained her to sit on console. Now, when we do launches, she's sitting in the command and control center, coordinating with the FAA, coordinating with Space Force, and coordinating with our security personnel on site to make sure the public is safe on a launch and loves it. So this is exciting. It's fun to see us creating more tech jobs for Alaskans here. And the governor recognized some of our work through the Denali Peak Performance Exceptional Team Award, which we're proud of as well. The last slide I have is talk about continued partnerships and collaboration. This is one piece of a bigger puzzle I see for Alaska and why Alaska Aerospace Corporation was formed. We've collaborated with Dr. McCoy and the university on the Rapid and Agile Space Launch, or RASL, Innovation Center. We've done a number of innovations already about how you support deployed spaceports and how do you bring in digital capabilities at the spaceport. We're looking to create a physical center, a facility at Kodiak that would have an innovation lab, interactive STEAM learning capability for K through 12, plus the graduate level and entrepreneurs, integrating that with marine activities, because I see this to that next point of integrating launch into Alaska and Kodiak's way of life, of really being able to kind of blend that. We are administratively tucked under DMVA, and General Sachs, Commissioner Sachs, has been a great partner of collaborating with us on the government military launches, and we're integrating in the Alaska Space Defense Force personnel to provide some security support when we do a government launch, and collaborating with us on DoD flight tests as well. Working with Poker Flat and Dr. McCoy on getting them their commercial license so they can do more work up there. And then lastly, with the university, establishing an online professional certificate on spaceport operations. Not only teaching Alaskans about what it means to run a spaceport, but then exporting this knowledge into the rest of the country and the world, and really being a thought leader around this. And the last note is about this all has to work with Alaska, right? This coming alongside a new technology. When we do a launch, we do close down the airways and the seaways and land. We are doing that now in better transparency and collaboration with the community. So when there's a fishing opening or closure, we're shifting our launch. When we recognize that airplanes need to get down to Old Harbor and other locations on the island, and so we are adjusting our times in our launch corridors, our safety corridors, to ensure that they can continue to do that. So it's been great collaboration there. We're working with the Civil Air Patrol and an ambassador program. I've been asked to be a new member of the Kodiak Economic Development Corporation. So it's been exciting to see this all come together as a community. We've got great support on island for the spaceport as well. Last is just a picture of what I think is the most beautiful spaceport in the world, and Astra's launch vehicle there. So I think there's a 90-second video of Astra's launch from December. I don't think there's any audio with it. But it's exciting here. You'll see that this rocket, at the beginning of it, you'll see a lot of spray, and that's just water. That keeps the acoustics down. So this is Astra's rocket going on their pad. There's the water deluge. That keeps the acoustics, so when it launches, it doesn't rip the rocket apart, and then it briefly sits there and it launches very quickly. It's a great sight seeing it go past Yugak Island. And when it reaches space here, you'll see the stages separate. That's the fairing around the payload coming off. That's a great sight. You'll see, if you look closely, I think on the next frame, you can see the island of Kodiak from space. So that Astra, with this launch, joined a very elite group of commercial customers, companies that have been able to reach space with an orbital class vehicle. I think they're probably number 3 or 4 if you're keeping track of the numbers. So that concludes my remarks. I'll take any questions.
Thank you, President Lester. I just found your presentation to be fascinating. My only question is, what advice do you have to young Alaskans who want to pursue this kind of a thing for a career?
So great question. My suggestion is certainly science and technology and math and engineering are key to this, although you don't need to be an engineer. I think having an interest in this field goes a long way in wanting to do the hard work to implement this. I look at running the spaceport a lot like running the airport. We need a diverse group of staff to do that. And I think there's lots of opportunities. You heard earlier from Dr. McCoy and Dr. Cahill, opportunities to get involved on the unmanned systems and operations, as well as satellites and then launch. But certainly engineering, math are some of the key education elements of it.
Thank you very much. Senator Stevens.
Maybe Senator, go ahead if you care to. Well, let me just have a comment to make. This has been going on for 30 years, long before me, before my presence here. We had a representative in Kodiak that said, we're not rocket scientists. Oh, wait a minute, I guess we are. And the point was that I wanted to make is that you are including many Alaskans and many Kodiakans. You said 95% of your employees are from Alaska, 70% from Kodiak. So I really appreciate how that has progressed and added to your employee, the numbers of people you have working for you. But I just wanted to make a comment about the project, about the purchasing, about the building of it. I believe you said $120 million have been invested. That money came from Senator Ted Stevens was able to put money aside for us. And in addition, the state funded every year a substantial amount. But we've gone down to the point now that the state is no longer putting any money in, that the rocket launch is self-sufficient. It's doing the job it was intended to do. And though the state owns it, we are not funding it every year as we once were. So that's a great step forward. I thank you for that. Great job, Mark.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Holland.
And I just wanted to thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say I've actually been to the Kodiak Spaceport. I went there about 5 years ago, and it was a great facility back then. It looks like you've only done crazy improvements since then. Congratulations, no small accomplishment. Flipping your workforce to being so homegrown. And space tourism, I didn't realize that was on the horizon. I didn't realize that was a thing with balloons and bars and whatever in the sky. But I look forward to seeing it from a distance. It's still a bit too far away from home for me. But thanks for your presentation. Truly incredible.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Holland. And thank you. I participated last week in your hosting of a online event with Dr. Mattman from NASA JPL and hearing more about Mars. And I'm going to reach out to him about what we can maybe do more with JPL. That would be great to continue to build on innovation.
Madam Chair?
Senator Holland?
That was a really interesting. The hour went by so quickly. And it was truly interesting. I learned just so much about the endurance and the ingenuity. And, we're doing truly incredible things in Alaska, and we're doing truly incredible things in the United States. It's really an exciting time. Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming before the committee. It's been really enlightening today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Lieutenant Governor Meyer, would you like to introduce our next speaker from the Aerospace States Association?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I'd just like to make a comment. I'm also very interested in tourism in the state of Alaska. And so this capsule going up to the edge of space and seeing the northern lights, just it sounds awesome. I think I'm looking forward to that, and I think it will be a big hit. The only thing, I am glad to hear there's a bar on that capsule, because I'm afraid if I was up there, I would need that. Our final speaker today is Ross Garlick Bell. He's our executive director of the Aerospace States Association, ASA, and he's going to talk about Aerospace Day at the other states that belong to the ASA. And briefly talk about two of the benefits now of Alaska being a member of the Aerospace Association. I think he'll talk a little bit too about the convention that's coming up in Denver for Aerospace States, and certainly you all are welcome to attend. And then in 2022, I'm happy to say again, this is part of the tourism thing, is that we're going to be hosting Aerospace States Association convention in Girdwood, so something to look for all of us to look forward to. So with that, Ross, I'm going to turn the floor over to you.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. I hope you can hear me okay. And I haven't started drinking yet for St. Patty's, even though it is happy hour time here in D.C. But I'll hopefully get to that soon and let the rest of you have a good salute for the holiday. As Lieutenant Governor said, I'm the Executive Director of the Aerospace States Association. I don't know if you have my slides there. I do see them on the camera. Okay, great. So ASA is a nonprofit 501c3 made up of state governments. So you can compare us to a specialty focus for, say, NLGA or NCSL. We are, again, funded through state dollars from each state government to focus on aerospace policy. The organization's main objective is to facilitate the discussion both in, within the states on how to improve the aerospace community, and also then unified with other states in pushing for federal objectives through the Congress and the executive branch. Now, a lot of folks, you know, around the aerospace industry always think that aerospace is federally focused. And that's because most of the programs that deal with aerospace are federal programs. They're NASA or military driven, FAA. And so they don't see where the role is of state governments. Well, they're quite wrong on that. It's very clear from our side of the things that without the state governments, you don't have any federal programs. If you don't have the STEM education programs at the universities, you don't have the engineers and the students needed for those federal programs. If you don't have the workforce developed or the tax programs established to keep the industrial base going within your state, you don't have the capability to build their part of a component for a national program. The way that ASA views it is each state is a star on the flag, and the only way that flag gets put on the side of an F-35 jet is if all 50 states are building it. And so ASA works hard to see that industrial base, to see that aerospace community and that innovation come to fruition at the federal level, but then also see those federal, that fruition pay off at the state level through state technology and state use. So we work on other programs where we see, where we work to see how aerospace programs can be within the state, using drone technologies and seeing how the states can adapt, helping the state governments look at best practices with other states of how they facilitated more growth for their industry, encouraged more economic development, and seeing how more students are able to get involved. States have done programs from apprenticeships for high school students in Alabama and Colorado, to full-blown internships that are set up. We've run education competitions where the students will build a drone competition and compete against each other with different states. And then ASA has been a strong advocate for encouraging more legislative involvement and also for the Native tribes, tribal governments and Native Alaskans to be getting involved as well, as that's a whole new area that we're seeing. Usually state legislators that get involved with ASA do end up moving up to the federal level. So we do have a new congressman out of Hawaii that is a Hawaiian airline pilot, but was also the caucus chair in the Hawaiian legislature for aerospace, and has been very proactive on aerospace policy, now sitting on the Transportation Committee, and that's Congressman Kai Kahili. We had an ASA chair out of Arizona, State Legislator Orlando Teller, who represented the Navajo region. And I know you mentioned I keep calling it Worldview, Mark, and I apologize. I know they have a different name for it up there. But the original concept for that float up and see the thing was going to be in Page, Arizona at one point. And so the Navajo Nation was brought into discussions of what happens when the vehicle lands on tribal land. But Representative Teller was our chair there. He is now going to be in charge of the FAA's tribal relations program, and his number one goal is to see drones and spaceports coming out to Indian country. So moving on in the slides, we can jump past the mission because I kind of went through that already. We get to policy development. ASA does have a policy doc that we share with the state governments, going over all the different federal programs that the states are involved in, whether it's building GPS-3 or Earth observation, working with the drone programs to see, you know, more expansive use of them and ability to, where flight zones are in airspace coordination. There we have that. We also are now looking into a new area that's getting very hot, which is hypersonics for rapid global transportation. That is one area where spaceports are being looked at as the new gate entry point for hypersonic flight. And so that's a new area that ASA has been targeted to get involved in, and we'll be looking at a lot of new policies there. So ASA is broken down where each state that is a member, they have also a chapter within that state. Alaska just formed theirs officially yesterday. These chapters are developed in order to coordinate internally the state on working on programs in unison to better the entire state. ASA doesn't get involved in battles between states or battles within the state, but we do provide advice and show best practices where needed for states that are looking to move into different industry types and see what the best route may be. So we have, in that regard, the chapters do educational programs quite a bit, like this Alaska Aerospace Day. And during normal times, when you're able to meet in person, you usually have a reception, get to know the new legislators. The corporations come in, they may bring exhibits. In Arizona, we had a full-blown rocket brought up to the state capitol, which I guess was a new way of looking at concealed carry down there. But that rocket got a lot of attention as it drove through the city of Phoenix. We've had drones fly over the Capitol Dome to do imaging for the legislature. In Alabama, they actually found a crack in the dome during the Aerospace Day. Auburn University was doing the flight, and it led to the legislature actually improving and fixing the dome that later that after session. And then usually we'll have discussions like this, where you bring in the experts to be able to hear what's going on and update everybody on activities that are going on within the state, and then where some federal programs are that the state may want to get into. So moving on, and I'll just jump off the slides because I didn't stick to them too well, and I apologize, but they're there for your information. ASA is going to be holding our annual meeting in Denver this year if the state opens back up. We are going to try to piggyback that with the Space Symposium, which Alaska Aerospace does participate in every year. That is one of the largest conferences of its type with every vendor you can imagine out there. And that would be open to state officials to come to and then participate in our discussion of the states of what's going on around. It's going to be more of a low-key event than in the past years just because of COVID and how it'll be open. And then we expect in 2022, Alaska to be our hopefully return to normal event, where we have a big event with state legislators, lieutenant governors from around the country coming in for policy panel discussions and a celebration with our Hobson Award nominees and activities like that. Our last big event was in 2019, celebrating the Apollo 50th anniversary. And we were honored to have Dr. Buzz Aldrin as our keynote underneath the Saturn V in Huntsville, Alabama, during the launch window for the Apollo 11 mission. It made it very special, and it made it one of our first of its type kind of conference, and we hope to bring that kind of effort up to Alaska in 2022. So again, thank you to all you that are now leading the chapter, and we look forward to working with you from Washington here in D.C. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bell. Are there questions that committee members have? Okay, seeing none. Lieutenant Governor Meyer, would you like to end today's session with a few final parting comments?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, thank you for hosting the first Aerospace Day at the Alaska Capitol, and for all the efforts of your staff and my staff to and the Labor and Commerce Committee itself to make this presentation happen. Obviously, this is something that that we want to do more of in the future. So next year, like last year when we planned this time last year, of course, what happened last year this time, we were going to do a lunch and learn and a presentation again in your committee, Madam Chair, and then a reception later in that afternoon. So that's something I hope that we can get back to. I think next year that should be doable. And then, just get an update on the improvements and changes. Obviously, it's a very rapidly changing industry. And so I want to thank our presenters today, Dr. Kathy Gahill, Dr. Robert McCoy, Mark Lester, and, of course, Ross Bell. And again, the researchers, we appreciate all the research that you do for us and all the work that you are doing in the aerospace industry. And for taking the time to make your presentations before all of us here in Juneau and statewide. So as you can see, Madam Chair, there's just a lot of potential in this industry, a lot of economic and job growth activity that's already going on that, frankly, I didn't know about, but can only expand and grow. And so I'm very excited about our future of aerospace here in Alaska, whether it has to do with the rocket launches themselves, as we saw, or if it's the drones, satellites, an area that we didn't even really talk much about, and that's just general aviation. And I know, Madam Chair, you're interested in aviation as I am, and certainly the military is doing great things in the area of aviation and drones too. So hopefully next year we can expand and include maybe some of the activities that the military is doing. So again, I'm looking forward to Aerospace Day again next year. It'll be larger, and certainly I hope that you can all attend the convention that we have next in the summer of 2022. We plan on having it at Girdwood at the, I forget what that hotel is called now.
Alyeska Hotel.
Alyeska, yeah, thank you. Alyeska Hotel. And some of the corporate, Ross is working on this, and Enmark, to get some of our corporate sponsors, Boeing or Lockheed, to also sponsor flying everyone to Kodiak so that we can go see Gary's house and then also the Alaska Aerospace launch site there in Kodiak. So, Madam Chair, thank you very much for this time today, and thank you, committee members, for your interest.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Governor Meyer. I also would be remiss if I didn't mention that we have on this committee the current chair of the Senate Education Committee and the former chair, Senator Stevens. Senator Holland is the current chair. I am particularly interested and have been for a long time to engage young people in careers where they can stay in Alaska and be contributing citizens. And certainly I'm very proud to have the high school in my district where we have a Project Lead the Way engineering program where students go through that rigorous program and they can graduate with an engineering cord. And so we have a lot of talented teachers and educators in the state. The engineering programs are spreading out throughout our high schools. We also have been supportive of the engineering program at the university and have toured there. And really, I think that when it comes down to it, I think we all are very committed to finding some really exciting opportunities for young people. And so that's my interest in this. And I know we also have Senator Rivak, who's interested in the military angle, and Senator Gray Jackson, who also has been a long time public servant caring about young people and the opportunities that they have. So today's just been a fabulous day for learning, and I look forward to working with everybody in the future. Maybe we'll all see each other in Denver. Who knows? But again, thank you, Lieutenant Governor Meyer, for bringing this to the committee. We were happy to host it today, and I'm just thrilled that Alaska is now a member of the ASA, and we hope to be contributing members. So with that, the committee is adjourned.